What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien. Joining me, as always, is the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. We are recording in the HedgeBetter studios today in Braintree, Mass. You will notice the name change, and that is because we have just decided to change the name of the podcast to better reflect that we cover mostly the Patriots. So we hope you will all appreciate that, and you'll see those changes on our Facebook page and everything else we do. Justin, what's going on, my man? How are you?
I'm good. Is this our first? No, we did a post draft podcast.
We did a post draft podcast.
So we talked about that a little bit. But you know what? Now that the draft is over, we're kind of back in that like awkward period a little bit, right? Until things really start heating up.
It's pretty dead time on the NFL calendar. There's no doubt about it. There's not a lot of news. We don't have a ton, to go through this episode, but we do have some stuff that I think I wanted to bring up. So I think we'll just get right to it. You watching the Celtics and Bruins, by the way, Justin?
Yeah, unfortunately. I think they're both kind of bumming it right now.
Celtics?
It's tough to feel good about the Celtics, man. I don't know. I don't feel good about them. I'm not going to feel good about them until I see them back with a healthy Porzingis in the lineup and their rolling teams. I mean, I don't know. They've looked a little sloppy.
Yeah.
Bruins, obviously, super disappointing.
Well, this is what I'll say about the Celtics. Either one of either the Pacers or the Knicks represents a much bigger challenge than anything they face in the playoffs. But I think they'll win either one they play, but it's going to be a challenge.
Well, to that point, even though it's going to be a challenge, I think that either one of those teams would be a super weak overall Eastern Conference Finals opponent.
Yeah.
Like, I think in the past, like, they faced much tougher teams.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think they should win. I think they should win pretty handily, whoever they face. So, but we'll see.
What's scary about the Celtics is all going to come down to this seven-game finals series, right?
Exactly.
And, like, if they puke on their shoes again, then it's like go back to square one, and it's a devastating blow for the franchise.
Exactly. And it's just going to further show that we might not have the guy in the team that could take us over the edge. Like, we talk about Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, like, being superstars, like Porzingis, guys like that, but like, you got to win.
Yeah.
You got to win. And there's only a select few guys in the NBA that seem to win. So, I mean, you look at the championships over the last like 15, 20 years, it's only a handful of guys that lead their teams to championships.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep, absolutely. And as for the Bruins, you know, I think that if they bow out tomorrow night against Florida, look, I'll feel like they've lost to the better team, because I think the Panthers are a better team. I think they have an element on their team the Bruins can't match. And I think that if you all thought back to last summer or last fall, where we thought this Bruin teams would be, they've definitely exceeded expectations. They've developed the goaltender of their future. They got to get some offensive firepower, but I think they're in good shape moving forward with a good young core, missing a few pieces. But I feel like if they bow out tomorrow night, look, I'm not rooting for that, but I feel like I'd be okay with that.
I'm just disappointed in the fact that, look, Florida came back from, I think it was like a 3-1 deficit last year, right? And beat them in the series. And then this year in the regular season, I'm pretty sure the Bruins are 5-0 against the Panthers.
4-0, yeah. 4-0
against the Panthers. So for them to go back into the playoffs and suffer crushing defeat to the Panthers, especially when they blew a couple of those games, like, badly, you know what I mean? I don't know. I get what you're saying. You feel good about them moving forward, but again, it's tough to see them get stuck.
I just think
that
Florida is the superior team. I mean, the Bruins have no one on their roster right now. I know Pastrnak, you know, he scores a lot of goals, but I don't feel like he is the creator that has that playmaking ability that some of the guys on the Panthers do. And I just think it's the better team is going to win if Florida wins.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, what, game six tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, at the Garden, right? At the Garden.
All right,
at the Garden. So we'll see if they can extend it and stay alive. They're kind of hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
All right, but this is a football. It's not a hockey. It's not a basketball podcast. This is a football podcast. So we're going to get right in. We're going to start off with the opening take, called the kickoff, that we use to set the table for the rest of the show. A lot has happened this week. The biggest news this week is probably the schedule. So we are going to go game by game and break it down. But before we even get there, I thought we could kick it off, just talk a little bit about mini camp. And I think this does tie a little bit in to the schedule release, Justin, and that is, look, you know, we saw our first look at Drake May in a Patriots uniform this week in minicamp in Foxborough, and it's really hard to get a sense at this point of what, you know, what this guy is or is going to be. It's more or less impossible, but just from the buzz you hear down in Foxborough, and the more and more I think about where this team is, and I would say seeing the schedule, which we'll get to, only aids me or makes me feel stronger about this. But the more I think about it, all offseason I've been operating on the assumption Jacoby Brissett was going to be the guy for most of this year. And as more and more time passes, now we've seen a look at Drake May, we've seen the schedule, I feel like we are going to see Drake May sooner rather than later this season.
Well, you know, we talked about it a little last night. It's a tough road to start. Yeah. I think after last year, we were kind of mapping it out in our heads and we said to ourselves, oh, well, you know, just the schedule's due to get a little easier, lighten up a little bit next year. And I don't think that's the case at all,
right?
Really. So, yeah, they're coming out hot right out of the gate. Obviously got a rookie head coach. It could be very conceivable that they hit a spot where, you know, they turn to their rookie and sooner rather than we think. But you know what? Part of me kind of wonders and says, does it go the opposite way? Like if things are going that poorly, like, do you want to expose Drake May to that? Like, do you want to risk putting him in a situation and having done to him what we did to like a Mac Jones or something like that? I don't know. What do you think?
Do you think there's any chance this is like a Jordan Love situation where this guy sits the full year? I mean, there's no chance he's going to sit multiple years. Because they don't have Aaron Rodgers ahead of him. So we can throw that out. Is there a chance he sits this whole year and doesn't see the field? I might have said yes a few weeks ago, but I feel like now the answer is definitely no.
Let me ask you, why do you think that is?
Because I feel like he is going to show he is the most talented of the bunch. I feel like they're going to be under tremendous pressure at some point to get him in there when they start losing games. And I think there will come a point in the season relatively soon, unfortunately, where this is going to be a developmental year. I think that what will happen is they will start off very slow. They will have a tough start, but they will come together a little. Even though they're losing, they will solve some of their issues on their offensive line. At some point, 4 to 8 weeks into the season, they will solve some of their issues at the receiver position. Around the same time, they will become a functional unit sometime in October. And I would not expect them to be a functional unit 1 second before that. I think it's going to be a rough September for them. And I think at that point, where they're going to be 1-5 or 2-4, and they're going to have some of those issues worked out, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to put Drake May in. I think they will put Drake May in. See what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'm just as eager to see Drake May as anybody. And, I'd love to see like what he's made out of, give him a chance to kind of, you know, get his feet wet. I mean, it'd almost be nice to say too, like, you know, to play my own devil's advocate, like it might be nice to give Drake May a chance to get some, you know, regular season game reps under his belt when nothing like proverbially is on the line. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so
exactly.
Let him go out there and just play knowing that, hey, we're not contending for a playoff spot. We're not contending for a Super Bowl. Like this is your stretch of the year to go out there and just get comfortable. So I wouldn't hate that. No, I definitely wouldn't hate that.
I've told you what I think they will do. What do you think they should do?
What do I think
should
they
wrap
should
up in
do?
Bubble wrap and just store them until 2025? I mean, I feel like he needs experience, and at some point he's going to have to get that in an NFL game.
He definitely needs experience. I think that Drake May should wait to see the field until we're at a point where there's nothing really to play for other than just like pride and setting the foundation for next year type of thing. Like if I think we should run Jacoby Brissett into the ground for as long as we're somewhat competitive. Like if we were able to come out and, you know, go 2-4, 3-3, and we still, you know, have a chance to put things together and maybe wind up in a wild card spot, I think you stick with Jacoby. Like, I don't think you should turn the keys over to Drake May until you're ready to kind of pack it in for the year almost.
Yeah, that's probably the responsible thing to do. But it's like, it's the same thing as like, look, you get some money in your pocket, and do you go save it and invest it, or do you go spend it? And it's like, you know, do you do the long-term smart thing or the short-term smart thing? And like, you know, right, emotionally right now, I mean, I don't really want to see Jacoby Brissett play at all for the Patriots now that we have Drake May. And I thought I did. I thought I was okay with Jacoby Brissett being the bridge quarterback and rolling with him for a year plus until May was quote unquote ready. But now that we got this like shiny new toy, and I feel like this is like the Drake May era. This is the Drake May era in Foxborough. So let's go 3-14 this year. Let's go 4-13 this year, but let's develop Drake May. Let's put him out there and let's see what he can do. And maybe as the year goes on, a la Drew Bledsoe's rookie year, which I know you don't remember because it was before your time, you know, he shows you something. So then in those last month, you say, okay, we have something for next year. Like there's big part of me that just wants to make this year entirely about Drake May's development and just throw all the rest of it away, you know, because I think ultimately long term, that's really what this franchise is hinging on.
So, all right. So let me pose a question to you. So, you know, I think to your point, right, that's probably what's best for Drake May's long term development, right, to prepare him the best for next season. If I had a crystal ball and I could tell you, hey, with Jacoby Brissett under center, the Patriots will be a 9-8 team. They'll be potentially fighting for a wild card spot. Would you take that, given what we've seen the last few seasons from this team, right? At the point we are now, where we're so desperate to just compete and sniff the playoffs again, would you rather this season be more about Drake May's development, or would you take 9-8 with Jacoby Brissett in a wild card spot?
I would 1,000% rather this season be about Drake May's development. And I'd rather them go 5-11 or 5-12 or 6-11 and walk out of this year and say, Drake May is our guy, and he had a really strong last second half of the season, then, you know, kind of trudged through a bunch of 17, 13 games, and you're 9-8, and Drake May never saw the field, and you still don't know what you have. Like, I think that this year is now officially all this whole thing, this whole operation is now officially all about Drake May, his growth, his development, and getting him to that next level.
To bring it back, though, right? If you look at... What do you think is, in general, right, looking at today's landscape of quarterbacks, what do you think is a better formula for success? Like, are we seeing more success with quarterbacks who sit for a year or two and then take the reins, a la like a Patrick Mahomes, a Jordan Love, or are we seeing more success with quarterbacks coming out right out of the gate? Like, regardless of Drake May and the Patriots, like, what do you think in today's era of football is a better strategy for success?
I mean, I think it depends on the guy, right? It depends on the player, Justin. If you see from Drake May that in training camp that he is the best player or gives you the best chance to win, I don't think there's any reason why you shouldn't put him out there in week one. And even if there is a little bit of a struggle at the beginning, you know, look at Josh Allen as an example of that. Like, everyone thought Josh Allen was a bust. For a year and a half at least, right? We all thought Josh Allen playing sucked. He looked awful his rookie year. He looked awful for most of his second year. He didn't really start to flash until his third year. And when he really obviously turned into a franchise level quarterback, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I think you have to look at the player and see what you have. But I would say this, if Drake May shows this summer that he is the best player for the job, there is absolutely no reason to keep him in bubble wrap for a year unless you feel like the team is just that derelict and bad that you're going to be doing long-term damage to him, a la David Carr, a la Mac Jones. But even then, I mean, if Drake May really is that good, he'll at least be viable with almost any NFL team around him.
I mean, if that's the case, do you start him week one and set the precedent that he's got the reins and it's his team right out the gate?
This is what I would say to that. Now that the schedule's out, look at their schedule in the first few months. We're going to talk about this tough schedule, some tough games, some tough defenses. I think you have to get a good look at the kid in the summer, obviously. I would put him in, most likely you're asking me, sometime in October, and I'm going to throw out that game in London against the Jacksonville Jaguars as a good time maybe to put him in there. I think, you know, they play at San Francisco in week two or three. They play Seattle at Cincinnati. They got some tough games. They got the Texans who are like, you know, amped up this year and going for it all. And then I think the schedule gets a little lighter for the period there in late October. So I think that Jacksonville game would be a great time to look. If he isn't in already by then, that's when I would be looking to put him in.
All right. Fair enough. I look, I can respect that. And look, who knows, you know, what they're going to do? Who knows how it's going to play out? I would obviously love to see Drake May. But I don't know. I want to go with the guy who's going to give me the best chance to win. Because I'm a spoiled Patriots fan.
Yep.
And I'm getting tired of these lackluster seasons.
Yep.
That's just me. But you know what? At the end of the day, if we have the guy, I guess we got to do whatever's best for his long-term growth and development.
Well, so let's talk about lackluster seasons, because the schedule was released this week. And we had both kind of talked back and forth a couple times about one of the things we liked about this year was the schedule might be a little lighter.
Yep.
And when I see the schedule release and I actually see the games on the schedule, and I'm wondering to myself, how the hell did we get that impression that this was going to be an easier schedule? Because actually the reality is this is a really tough schedule for a 4-13 team, if you think about it. And I think they caught a couple tough breaks in that regard. First of all, the Jets are going to be much better. They played them twice. They weren't that good last year. They're going to have Aaron Rodgers back. That's a tough break for a 4-13 team. The Bengals, Joe Burrow was hurt last year. You draw the last place team in the AFC North. This year, it happens to be the Bengals, who are a good team and a Super Bowl contending team. Many years, that would be a cupcake game or a game with a team that's just as bad as you are. Not this year. Now you've got a good team, a Super Bowl caliber team. The Bears, you drew the fourth place team from the NFC North. Okay, again, a lot of years, that might be a cupcake. Now you have a revamped Bears team. I'm not a believer in the Bears. We're going to talk about over-unders later in the show. That's one of the unders I want to take is the Bears. I think they're going to struggle way more than people think. But that said, that is no gimme. So you look across the board and there are some really tough games on the schedule that may not have been tough games in, you know, most years for a team in comparable situation. This is a tough schedule for the Patriots, Justin. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, even just looking at the schedule, you know, again, like, and obviously you have to keep everything in context, right? Like the team that we have, right? What our actual talent level is. But I'm going through and I'm trying to find games where I could maybe mark it up as, you know, like it should be an easy win or, you know, we should be able to have a slight edge. Like, there really aren't any. I mean, there's very few games.
Yeah,
until we know what we're getting out of our quarterback, there's very few, if not any, games that we could say that we have a slight edge.
Well, that's actually one of my take-homes from the schedule. We're going to go game by game and just kind of like do the whole pick, win-loss thing.
Yeah.
But I would say this. Of the 17 games on their schedule, there are like six or seven that I would say the Patriots not necessarily will be favored in, but it wouldn't be a major upset if they won. There, you know what I'm saying? Like there's like 9, 10, 11 games on the schedule that I have a hard time seeing the Patriots winning. And there's like 6 or 7 games on the schedule where I could say, okay, they have a real chance. Like we talk about Jacksonville, right? We're probably going to call Jacksonville a win week 7. Who's the better team? Jacksonville won 8 games last year. You know, they made some big additions this offseason. They drafted a good receiver in the first round.
Yeah.
They have a good quarterback. We hate him, granted, but he's not a total slob.
Right.
You get my point.
Yeah.
You know, Tennessee, we're going into their stadium.
Yeah.
You know, as Patriots fans, we want to call that game as a win. And I wouldn't be surprised if they won that game. But Tennessee's over-under is 6.5, according to Vegas. That's 2 full games better than the Patriots.
Yeah.
They're a much better team
than
we are going into the season, or predicted to be a much better team. So you look at that schedule, there's like 7 games like that I can convince myself they're going to win, or that they're going to have a chance that they're going to win. And then I see like 10 games where I'm like, man, I have a hard time seeing them win that game.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, honestly. I look at I look at the Patriots schedule and I say, look, I think there are a lot of tough games. The Colts game, Indy's going to be tough, I think, especially if Anthony
Richardson's
back.
And that's in their building or our building? I forget. I think it's at Foxborough.
I'm looking right now. I got the schedule in front of me.
Indy, that's in Foxborough.
Yeah, Indy's at home. But yeah, it's just and you got a late season bye. I'm looking at it right now. It's looking like a week 14 bye.
Yeah, it's a late bye.
Week 14 bye. So, I mean, there's not going to be much relief to kind of regroup and catch your breath. So,
I mean, with a rookie quarterback, that was another one of my observations for the schedule. You know, the rookie quarterback, you'd like to have a bye around midseason. So you could maybe as a natural time where you could say, okay, you know, this might be the time we would want to bring Drake May in if we felt like we need to make that transition. And I think there's only three or four games after the bye this year. They got one of the latest bye weeks in the year in the league.
Yeah.
So some of my other observations about the schedule is that, first of all 1 o'clock games, right?
Yeah.
Only two games that aren't at 1 o'clock, three games, but 1 4 o'clock, the Sunday game in London, and then only one national TV game. Oh, wow, the mighty have fallen. This is a team that had five or six night games a year for like two decades.
Yeah.
And now they have one.
Yeah.
Week three.
It's a humbling experience. And it also kind of tells you that, hey, I don't think they're looking to trick anybody over in Vegas. Like, I think they genuinely expect this team to be bad.
Right.
Right? Like, not just Vegas, the NFL sponsors. Everybody is expecting that this team is going to perform poorly this year.
Well, not only do they have one national game, but they gave it to them in week three. They're not even going to chance putting this team on national television in like week 12 or week 14 or week 16 or something. Because they're going to be like, they could be 3-11, you know?
Right. And doesn't every team get a Thursday night game?
Yeah, you have to. I think they're supposed to, but I think I heard somewhere that Carolina actually doesn't have any national television game this year.
That's
who you're rubbing elbows with.
Exactly. And we'll get to them. I have them slotted in for a superlative.
Yeah, I wish
later
the Patriots
on.
Were playing them. Man.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, I mean, it's crazy how far they've fallen in terms of just like the national stature. So just to reexamine something you just hit on, which is the Vegas expectation for this team, we have talked a few times about taking the over at 4.5 win total for this team. I've told you I was going to pound the over for this team. I'm still probably going to take it, but I got to say, when I went through the schedule, we're going to go in a minute, game by game.
Yeah.
I feel a lot less confident about that 4.5 win total than I did when I actually saw everything laid out here. And I'm like, you know what? I think 4.5 is probably really not that far off from where this team is likely to end up.
Oh, I agree totally, especially, you know, we think of where they ended up last year. They got lucky against the Bills once, right?
Yep.
They lucked out in the sense that Aaron Rodgers was out for the year. I don't know if that's going to be the case this year. I mean, they got a very tough division. I think those are three good teams, especially if they stay healthy. And yeah, like we said, the rest of their games on the schedule, no cakewalks. So 4.5, it's so funny saying that, oh, the Patriots hitting 4.5 or over 4.5. Like, and my brain is trained to say, oh, that should be an automatic smash. But I'm analyzing it. You know, I'm analyzing it now. And the more and more I think about it, I say, Vegas might have this kind of pegged. Or maybe even they're being generous.
Right. Well, the only other team in the league is Carolina's 4.5.
Yeah.
So the Patriots and Carolina are both 4.5. Those are the two lowest over-under win totals in the whole National Football League right now. Everyone else is higher. The Patriots are second to last in terms of predicted wins by Vegas. And I mean, that is sobering place to be. But like you said, you know, we're all conditioned to thinking this franchise and this team is a certain way. I mean, look, Belichick is gone. The dynasty is literally 10,000% over. It's history. It's ancient history now.
Yep.
That was probably history when Brady left. We didn't realize it. But now, there's no doubt, it's completely ancient history. And yeah, I mean, we have to get back to thinking things more realistically. And a 4.5 or 4 or 5 win season is totally within the wheelhouse of possibility for this team. And, you know, Justin, I would just say about that, you know, I want this team to be competitive this year. But look, if they end up developing Drake May and he looks good and they end up with another top 5 pick, a la the Bengals a few years ago, and you go out and you grab your Jamar Chase to your Joe Burrow and they keep developing some of these young players that they've drafted now the last few years, I mean, maybe that's what the way it needs to be to get this franchise back routed in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, if we're playing the long game and we're saying, hey, let's go develop our franchise quarterback, let's maybe put ourselves in a position to get another high draft capital player next year, a tackle, receiver, somebody who can come in and make an immediate impact. Like, you know, maybe that's what we're staring down the barrel of.
Now, you should have planned your wedding in December, because that Nashville game would have been a terrific bachelor party for you on November 3rd.
Yeah, I know. Well,
it's a great opportunity.
I will say, you know what? I went down to Nashville for a Patriots game in November.
I remember
before,
that.
And
the weather's not that good in
November.
That's
what I was going to say. We made the mistake of thinking we were going to get some nice weather. We froze our asses off.
Yeah, so, right. It's not that different than here.
It really
it's like
isn't.
5 or 10 degrees. And it's not that big a difference. Okay. And then, all right. Any other thoughts about the schedule? Let's go game by game and just kind of count this out so we can kind of, you know, get the early read on what we think is going to happen. I'll go game by game. Justin, Patriots at Bengals, week one, call that a win or a loss.
I'm going to call that a win.
Oh,
I'm going to call that a win. I'm coming out hot. I'm going to call that a win for a few reasons. I think the Bengals are notorious for starting slow.
Okay.
We've seen that the last couple of years. We still don't know how healthy Joe Burrow is going to be. And the fact that I still think the Patriots have a much better defense than Cincy. So, you know what? If we're going up against like maybe a Jake Browning, who I like, or a 70% Joe Burrow in week one, and they get all the pressure.
Is there a chance Burrow isn't going to be 100%?
So I think he's going to be ready for week one, but they're saying sometimes with that injury, like, you never get your full range of motion back. Like, he might be stuck around like 80, 90% for the near future.
That would be a big deal, for this game, for the whole career.
That would be a huge deal. And again, I just, the since he is always off to a slow start, I don't know. Yeah, I'm gonna give the Patriots a little bit of week one magic.
I like that they got the Bengals in week one, because I think this has the potential to be one of their tougher games.
Yeah.
And I think for some of the reasons you illustrated, it's better to get them in the first week. There's always that element of uncertainty in week one, which I think tends to favor underdog.
Yeah.
Burrow might be coming off an injury still. I kind of like the Patriots with 8.5 points, but I still got to call that one a loss. Love your optimism. Love your enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Have a hard time seeing Jacoby Brissett beat Joe Burrow in Cincinnati in week one.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's going to be tough for sure, But
okay, week two, Patriots at Seahawks. Now, I saw this initially and I said, this is going to be a loss. Then I thought about it. And, you know, Pete Carroll's gone. They're kind of going through a little transition thing themselves. My guess is Geno Smith won't be there for much longer as the quarterback. I think they got a lot of wheels in motion. I'm going to give the Patriots a win on this one. I think this will be their first win of the year.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I kind of agree, and it seems kind of crazy saying that the Patriots are going to start off the season 2-0, but I see two wins here, and then I think it goes sharply downhill. But I'm going to give the Patriots a win here too. Another rookie head coach on the road. I don't love Geno Smith personally. And again, I think we have the better defense. So I'll take the Patriots.
And in our building, home opener, I like the Pats in the week 2 game. Coming on a short week, Thursday night at the Jets, that's a loss. That's a tough spot for them against Aaron Rodgers, assuming Rodgers is there. Now, if Rodgers somehow was to get hurt again, different story. But I'm no big believer in this whole Jets thing this year. I've said that a few times, but I certainly think they'll be able to handle a very much developing Patriots team in their own home opener. So I'll take the Jets.
Yeah, I'll take the Jets in that one too. I don't think there's really much to overthink there, as long as Aaron Rodgers is healthy. Yeah,
absolutely. And then of course the following week the Patriots travel out west, facing one of the best teams in the National Football League, the 49ers. The last time the 49ers played the Pats, I think that was 2020. They absolutely decimated them. I'm sorry, I don't see any pathway right now the Patriots could win this game, and that could change, of course. But this looks like a tough one. I think this could be an ugly loss for the Patriots.
Yeah, I think that one. I think that one's going to be tough as well. I'm not as high on San Francisco this year, but I think they'll have enough to beat the Patriots.
I agree with that, by the way. I'm not super high. Their over-under total, by the way, is 11.5, which is really high.
And I'm taking that's going to be one of my picks when we come up.
We'll get there. But yeah, I'm with you on that. But I think they'll be able to handle the Pats. Dolphins at Patriots. Look, I'd love to call this one a win. Tua's never lost to the Patriots. the Patriots really struggle with the Dolphins the last few years. Until I can see that the Patriots defense, which seems to be the best thing this franchise has going for right now, but Tua has been one of the quarterbacks they've really struggled to stop. So I just feel like I got to go with the Dolphins here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Dolphins too. The Dolphins, I think, are only getting better. That their defense is getting better. I don't know what it is. I don't know how they seem to have our number, but they do. And I'm pretty confident.
I've been right about the Dolphins. I've called them a soft team for 2 or 3 years.
For sure.
You got to give me that. And I don't believe in the Dolphins as a whole. I don't think they're like a contender or anything like that, but I just can't realistically pick the Patriots against them given the kind of success they've had against them.
No, the Dolphins are kind of like the bullies of the NFL, right? They love to pick on the people weaker than them, but they don't very often hold up well with somebody their own size. Like Dolphin in a close game or competitive game against a good team, I'll take the opponent every time.
Absolutely.
But if the Dolphins are playing a garbage team,
right,
give me the Dolphins. They don't get upset by garbage teams.
I've told
teams.
You, he's like McDaniels is like, he's like Pete Carroll when he was with the Patriots. That's exactly what Pete Carroll was in the post-Parcells years, late 90s. They would beat the bag out of bad teams. They would start off 4-0, 5-1 every year. They would fall apart when they started playing good teams. They would fall apart late in the season. They would fall apart in any tough spot. It's exactly what the Dolphins are now. I think he finds himself on the hot seat at some point this year too, McDaniels, because I predict they'll have a similar trajectory this year.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Sure. Next one is the Texans at Patriots. Again, you know, I don't, Texans, maybe they're a little overrated. Maybe there's a little too much hype on them, but I still have a hard time seeing the Patriots beat that team. Playoff team last year made some big additions. If they're healthy, I think they come in and I think that's another loss for the Pats.
Yeah, I do too. I love CJ Stroud and this Texans team. I mean, you look at what they did last year and they only went out and just beefed up their entire roster even more, especially on offense. Like, they're going to be a tough unit to stop. Pretty scary.
That leads them to go to Patriots are going to London to play the Jaguars. Now, I'm going to call this one a win for the Pats, but I'm putting an asterisk on it. This is no cupcake. I mean, the Jaguars are a better team than the Patriots by far. So this is a winnable game for the Pats. These are the games where if they don't want their season to be a total debacle, they're going to have to win these games. But this is no cupcake. I'll give the Pats one, benefit of the doubt here. This one could go either way in my book.
Yeah, in reality, it's definitely a toss-up. I'm going to go the Patriots just because you know me. I think Trevor Lawrence is a bum. I think the Jaguars always seem to bum it in London, which has kind of become like their like quasi-like home stadium at this point. And I just don't like the Jaguars this year. I think they took a step back talent-wise from last year. I don't see it. I'm gonna take the Patriots over the Jaguars.
And you can bookmark this. Drake May will be the starting quarterback no later than this game. This will be the latest. Okay, nice. Jacksonville. Next week, Jets at Patriots again. I got to call this one a loss for the Pats. It's you know if Aaron Rodgers is healthy, it's going to be hard for me to see the Patriots compete with the Jets this year.
Yeah, the Patriots are going to have a really tough set of divisional games this year. I think the Jets are out for blood. If Aaron Rodgers is healthy, you know, after everything we've done to the Jets, even when we haven't been that good, we've still dominated the Jets. You know what I mean? And I think this is the year the Jets take revenge if they're healthy. I think they sweep us cleanly.
Next week, Titans. I'll give the Pats a win on that one. But again, in their stadium, you know, Titans are probably a better team than the Patriots. Giving them the win is really just me being a fanboy and trying to give them the benefit of the doubt in a few spots. This is no cupcake.
Yeah, I'll go with the Patriots too in this one. I'm not super sold on Will Levis or this Titans team. I still think it was weird that they moved on from Vrabel. I still don't understand that move, how Vrabel doesn't have another job. I think that's beyond me, but that's a whole nother point. But I think the Patriots go in there and get a win. I think our defense is better than the Titans. And again, it's rookie head coach versus rookie head coach.
Bears the next week. Again, I'm going to give the Pats a win on that one. Certainly no cupcake. Most people think the Bears are going to be a lot better. Their over under total is 8.5. So the expectations for the Bears are high. I still think this is a winnable game for the Pats. I'm going to give them this one.
I'll give him a win too. I hate Caleb Williams. I think he's going to fizzle out quickly. Yep.
Totally agree.
You know what I mean? We've said this before. I hope he's good. It would be good for the league if Caleb Williams is good. But I just can't see this guy. I can't see this guy being successful and this team being successful, at least right away. And I think that point of the season is going to be right around where we start to see the locker room sever in Chicago. I think we're going to start to see some snarky pressers out of our boy Caleb Williams. I think the curtains are kind of going to drop, so to speak, and Chicago's going to kind of be left standing in front of the audience and be exposed.
And look over the last like 10 or 20 years in the NFL, and there have been a lot of franchises that have done the whole super team thing, and it never really works out that well when they try to bring in all these pieces and skill position and then try to build a super team. It doesn't usually work. But then to do that with a rookie quarterback too, I mean, that's really not even a fair position to Caleb Williams. I mean, realistically, what point in the history of this league have we ever expected a rookie quarterback to come in and win 8 or 9 or 10 games right from the get-go? It's never happened. Yep. I mean, you could argue that a good season for Caleb Williams would be similar to what we just said for Drake May, which is like 5 or 6 wins, improve over the course of the year. The expectations for this kid are so damn high. It's unheard of.
Yep.
Unheard of. And it hasn't worked in the past.
No. And he does – look, Caleb Williams, he does have the weapons to do it. I don't think he's in necessarily like the toughest division in the world. There's really no easy division right now in the NFL, but it's not the toughest division. He's got the weapons.
You don't think it's a good division though? I mean, they got Green Bay. They got Detroit. Those are two of the final four teams in the conference.
So I'm a little bit lower, I think, on Minnesota and Green Bay. Okay. And other people. I love Detroit this year, as you'll see.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit lower on Green Bay and something tells me that when Jordan Love, I think last year it was kind of a situation where he had nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Yeah.
Right? Like people were kind of writing him off. I don't think people expected much out of that team. I feel like he's going to be the guy that after he kind of set expectations for himself, I don't think he's going to live up to them. I think he's going to regress. I think the Packers take a step back this year. And I think the Vikings are probably going to be and maybe a little bit of trouble as well. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's a bad division, but I don't think it's going to be a powerhouse division.
Okay. All right. So I guess that opens the door for the Bears a little. Okay. After the Bears, they got the Rams in Foxborough. Again, to me, this is a loss. I think the Rams are going to be one of the best teams in the NFL this year. I think you're going to see them be a Super Bowl contending team. I like them to win the NFC West. I'm going to bet them to win the NFC West this year. I'm going to take their over-under total at 8.5 wins. I feel like that team is very quiet and sneakily rebuilt. I know they lost Aaron Donald, but I feel like I like that Rams team. I think they come in. I think they pummel the Pats in week 10 or 11 there, whatever that is.
Yeah, I'll take the Rams too. I think as long as you got a healthy Matt Stafford, it's going to be tough to play them anywhere, anytime. So I'll take the Rams.
And then Dolphins again, that's a loss. Patriots haven't won in Miami. It's hard to say anything but a loss there. Yeah. You agree?
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
And then the Colts and Foxborough, I think that's a winnable game. So I'll call that a win. Okay. I'm not sold on Anthony Richardson yet. He came in, he looked good, okay at times last year. That was more for his legs. He hasn't really shown he can consistently throw the ball. You know, defensive coordinators are going to they figure out those one-trick ponies pretty quick in the NFL. So I think this is going to be a learning year for Anthony Richardson. He's got to prove he can stay healthy as well. I think the Patriots can beat the Colts in Foxborough. I'll take the Pats in that one.
I definitely think it's a winnable game, but I'm actually going to disagree. I'm going to take the Colts in this one.
Okay.
That's a team that I'm a little bit higher on maybe than others.
How come?
So I just think they have a lot of young – look, I think – you look at the fact that for the last 2 years, like they've dealt with injury problems. The fact they've dealt with injury problems in youth, right? You know, Jonathan Taylor was injured a lot of last year, and he had a little bit of trouble the year before, but he's clearly one of the best, most dominant running backs in the NFL. Anthony Richardson, I think when he was in the field, he showed a lot of flashes and potential. You know, I've heard, you know, rumblings around the internet that he's healthy and he's poised to have a big year. I think they got a good offensive line. They got a great receiving core, you know, headed by someone like Michael Pittman. And I think that defense is sneaky underrated. So I like the Colts a little bit.
Okay. All right. We'll see about that. I think there are some solid players on the team. I'm just not sold on Anthony Richardson yet. And then the last four games, Cardinals, Bills, Chargers, Bills. I mean, loss to me. I think the Patriots end on losing all four of those games. I mean, the Cardinals game, I thought a little bit about, but I think you got that Kyler Murray, Marvin Harrison combo in their stadium, traveling out west. Who knows where the Pats are going to be mentally at that point. I got to call that one a Cardinals win.
I'll call that one a Patriots win, okay. I think, because I, you know what, I agree. Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr., it's a tough combo, but I still think that's one of the most bare rosters from top to bottom in the NFL. I would even argue barer than the Patriots. So I'll give the Patriots a win in that one.
Okay. And then the last three games, Bills, Chargers, and Bills again. I'm calling all three of those losses. Anything? You going to disagree anywhere? Steal one against the Chargers.
Maybe steal one against the Chargers. Yeah. Maybe.
In Foxborough is the only thing that gives me pause. Them coming right up here December 29th, weather.
And the other thing, too, is I still haven't seen Herbert, you know, really put it all on the line and win big games and come up big in big moments.
Okay.
I could totally see the Chargers be desperately in need of a win at that point, like playoff hopes hinging on it, and have them come in and just lay an absolute goose egg in Foxborough.
It's kind of crazy how the Patriots don't play the Bills, by the way, until
I know
3 days before Christmas.
Yeah.
That's a crazy schedule. Okay, so there you go. So I think I counted out, and that's – so I gave the Patriots wins against the Seahawks, the Jaguars, the Titans, the Bears, and the Colts, and that's how I got to five. But okay, really think about those five wins, and there is no gimmies in anywhere.
No,
in that place.
Nowhere
in that list.
No, right? Nowhere. Even the wins I gave you, I'm in the same boat. There's no game that I would confidently bet my life on that. Not at all.
I mean, and let's face it, the floor for this team is pretty low. It really is. This could be another rough year, unfortunately. You know, so I'm calling them 5-12. Probably going to take the over, more because I'm a fan, I think, than because it's a rational bet. But but this is not an easy schedule. Not an easy schedule at all.
Yeah. No.
Any other thoughts on the schedule, Justin?
No. You know, I'm actually. I usually at this point, I've already picked out destinations to potentially scope. But you know what? It's going to be tough to do a road trip this year with the wedding, and a bunch of my buddies are all like having babies in the next couple months. Yeah. So it might be tough to do a road trip this year, but we'll see. Keeping the hope alive for right now.
Yeah, I mean, they got some great potential destinations this year, you know, in all fairness. Okay, and then, all right, let's talk very quickly two other things about the Pats. Then we're going to talk about some futures bets for the league and look at some of the NFL futures that are coming up. The GM search, any thoughts on that, Justin? They officially named Elliot Wolf the director of personnel, I think, is the title. What I find interesting about it is that Mayo is not reporting to Elliot Wolf. Mayo and Wolf are both reporting to Kraft. Not sure if that's the organizational structure I love. But I think we have to give them the benefit of the doubt at this point in this sort of whole post-Bill Belichick rebuild to see how this all works with everyone kind of going up in parallel tracks up to the owner. I thought we were trying to break down silos, not, you know, and that feels like it might actually engender them. But let's see how it works. What I will say is I'm thrilled that Elliot Wolf is officially the guy here, because I think he probably is the best thing this organization has going for them. And you know, let's give him 3 years to see if he can build this thing back up.
Yeah. I mean, you want, you know, you got a rookie head coach, you got a rookie quarterback. You know, you've had a lot of turnover in the front office. you really need someone that you can, you know, rest your hat on and say, hey, this is somebody who's competent that I have confidence in my organization. And hopefully yep. Elliot Wolf will be that guy. And we'll see him even just progress and kind of even maybe take the reins even a little bit more as we move forward.
I didn't love the way they did this, by the way, after the draft. I thought that was just, they should have had this all resolved back in January. I thought that was a little concerning to me. I mean, you see things like that and it does make you wonder, you know, is this organization going to be like a shit show, for lack of a better word, yeah. moving forward? You know, like why do you pick the GM after the draft and on a sham process with the Rooney Rule there? And, you know, everyone knew it was Wolf's job. Why not just do the interviews in January, get it done, and then you move forward as an organization? There's something weird and frankly implies a little dysfunctional. I'm hoping there's some compelling reason they did that I don't understand. But, you know, again, it doesn't come off the best to me.
Yeah, I guess maybe the only thing is you're waiting to see how he handles the draft before you give him anything a little bit more permanent. But I don't know. Yeah, it does kind of scream a little bit of dysfunction.
But how does Robert and Jonathan Kraft know? How does anyone know about how good a draft someone had, you know, a week or two after the draft is over? It legitimately takes 5 years for, you know, these drafts to, you know, manifest. And I just feel like, you know, I don't know. Could that have been the reason? It doesn't make sense.
I don't know either. But that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what would be the other reason? It just, I don't know.
Maybe there was just like too much going on. I don't know. It's hard to figure out a reason. All right. One last topic before we get to some futures. We haven't talked about the Brady roast yet, Justin. I don't know. Did you watch it?
I did. Yeah.
What do you think?
Thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. I thought to me that it was very interesting. The only, out of everything that was said, the one thing that crossed the line for Brady that actually he got up and audibly voiced his displeasure with was the massage joke about Robert Kraft.
Yeah.
And I just thought in the grand scheme of things, like, it was nice to see like that level of respect that he was trying to show Robert Kraft, right? But that was probably like the most mild thing said the entire night. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
I thought that was interesting. But overall, I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it was funny. You know, I do think some of them were too vulgar. I mean, vulgarity is a poor substitute for humor. And I'm sorry, you know, Gronkowski had some good stuff, but then he was vulgar at times. And I'm like, you know, it was just too far, I thought. I mean, a roast is fine. No holds barred. That's what a roast is. So I have no problem with that. But I just thought some of the stuff was really vulgar and I didn't love it. And then I thought, you know, yeah, okay, you're supposed to be able to joke about anything. But I did think there were a couple things that were just maybe a little too far at times. And I'm not really talking so much about the personal stuff and more about some of the social stuff that I just thought went a little too far. So was it funny? Yeah, it was funny at times. You know, I give Brady all the credit in the world for having the guts to do it, because that is just something that I never thought he would do. You know, it is what it is at this point, right?
It is. Here's two big takeaways that I had from this. The first of which is, you know, hearing some stuff behind the scenes, and you could even tell just from watching it live. But then afterwards, you know, you started to hear from some of the people that were on the dais, you know, kind of reporting like the behind the scenes info. The cheers with the shot between Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady.
Yeah.
There was clear tension between Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick.
No doubt about
it. Clear tension.
Still.
And not only was it visible in that broadcast, but that's what everybody was talking about after. They were saying how awkward that moment was.
It was so awkward.
And somebody even like warned Bill about it and whatnot. But so that was super awkward. You could tell there's tension. You could tell that things aren't on the best of terms with Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick. And you kind of expect that. The other thing that I took away from it was, and we started to see this a little bit earlier in the offseason, but what a 180 Bill Belichick has done in terms of like his personality and his willingness to like open up and be part of the media and laugh. And like, you saw what he was doing on draft night, and he's been on the Pat McAfee show, and now he's at roasting players and making jokes and sitting there.
I mean, I thought Belichick was the winner, if not the winner of the night. Yeah. I thought he came off awesome.
Yeah.
And I thought his roast was well-written. It was clever, funny, piercing, and no holds barred, but it wasn't vulgar. It was exactly what you want in a roast.
But this roast, coupled with everything we saw around the draft, coupled with other things we've seen, this is not the Bill Belichick that I knew for 20-something years. Yeah. Like, it's just a completely different personality. The guy who, you know, gave the media nothing all those years is now all of a sudden embracing being a part of it. Like, I just think it's very interesting to see him kind of make that transition.
What did you think about Gronk was up there and he was way off the roadmap and he was about to say something vulgar and it proved to be vulgar. And I didn't think it was funny what he said. I thought it was just trashy. Belichick trying to stop him and getting up and saying, "Don't say it, Rob. Don't say it, Rob." And I just saw like that was interesting because like Belichick, you know, was trying to protect Gronkowski from himself, which I bet he did a lot of in his time here when Gronk was here. Probably one of the reasons, like a lot of people when they're younger, they don't want to hear it. Gronk probably didn't want to hear it then. He may not want to hear it now. Probably one of the reasons there's a little tension between them still. But I love that Belichick still to this day felt like he had to get up and say something and say, "Don't say it, Rob. Don't say it, Rob," because you could see him getting off the roadmap trying to help him out. Yeah. You know, Gronk is not stupid. He is not stupid. And I hated that people called him stupid in that roast because he is anything but stupid. But that doesn't mean he's necessarily well-spoken, on his feet, or good in that kind of setting.
Right.
You know, and clearly I thought he wasn't, you know, but he's not a stupid guy.
No, not a stupid guy at all. He's actually a very smart football player and seems to be somewhat of an intelligent guy, even though he comes off as dumb maybe to some people. But yeah, I think like people like him, like Edelman, like I think they were just embracing it. Like it was kind of weird, like seeing them kind of talk the way they were talking, saying the stuff they were saying. But at the end of the day, I think they just figured, you know what, screw it. We're at a roast. We're with some heavy hitters. Let's just give it our all.
Yeah.
You know?
And what about Brady? What did you think of Brady's roast and what he said? Again, I thought it was a little... No need for all the cursing because he had some good stuff. You don't need to swear. I mean, you can swear if you need to. Fine. It's a roast. But just like I felt like it was a little too thick with that, needless. But, you know, I thought it was funny. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, Brady's was nothing really special. I mean, I thought it was all right.
Who was the worst one, you think?
Who I think the worst roaster was? Is that
an obvious one? Ben Affleck.
I was gonna say either Ben Affleck or Randy Moss.
Yeah.
Randy Moss wasn't that good either. One of the two of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was your favorite?
My favorite was Belichick.
I
thought Belichick was terrific. I really did. I thought he was clever. I thought he was witty. I thought he was piercing, but I thought he didn't go down to the road of just total vulgarity. And I thought he just struck the right balance. He came off as very human and like you said, I mean, he's really changed his public image.
Yeah.
And you see that side of him. We've heard about that side of him for years.
Yeah.
You know, people say, "Oh, he's not like how he is in on the media. He's not like that in person." And you saw that at the roast. And I think it was great for everyone to see that. And just having the balls to get up there.
Exactly.
And do it with Brady, you know. And I think there's no tension between Belichick and Brady.
They're good at this point. And I don't think there's tension between Kraft and Brady.
No.
I think all the tension is between Belichick and Kraft.
Belichick is pissed at Kraft.
Yes.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
I'm sure he blames him for the whole situation up here
and
get rid of him. Okay. Any other thoughts about the roster? I think we can just blow through some futures.
Let's do it.
All right. So, you know, I thought now with all the rosters more or less filled out, it would be a good time to take a look and start looking at some futures. We're going to start with over-under win totals. I had some other week one spreads and contenders. I think we should save that for another time because we're running short on time. But I think we should do the futures now. So, Justin, I asked you to look at the list and pick out a few futures that you liked. I don't know if you want to tell me a few of your best bets from the current futures list.
Yeah, so and these are teams that we kind of talked about. But I'm smashing the under on the San Francisco 49ers. I think this is a team that's going to have a big Super Bowl hangover. Yeah. I mean, they've knocked on the door for years now, and they just keep falling short. I think they're going to take a step back. They have a they don't have the easiest schedule either. I think 11.5 wins is going to be a little too much. I think they're going to be a 10-win team.
I think it's just a sensible practice in general. Like, you could make an argument to take the under on any team. I saw a statistical analysis of this once, right?
Yeah.
That if you take the under on anyone with an over-under total higher than 11, or the over on anyone with an over-under lower than 5, that hits like 70% of the time. So,
yeah.
You know, to your point, I don't know if I necessarily agree San Francisco as not being a good team this year, but all it takes is one injury to your quarterback, or, you know, Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel miss 8 weeks each or something.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're a 9 or 10 win team.
Yep, exactly. And the other one that I took another, I'll take another under, and you brought them up. That's the Bears.
Yeah.
You're
getting plus money on that.
You're getting plus money. I just don't see how the Bears are going to win 9 games. I don't see it. I don't think they're built for that. I mean, do I think they could win 7 games, maybe even 8? Yeah, but I don't know. I think the Bears are a year or two away from being an above 500 team.
No, I agree with that. And I think if you're asking a rookie quarterback to win 9 games, how many times has that happened in league history? I mean, there's a handful of guys that have been able to pull that off.
Yeah.
You know, they're bringing in all these pieces. Nobody knows if it's going to all fit together. Keenan Allen has been hurt the last few years. I don't think DJ Moore is as great. Roma Dunze is a rookie. Caleb Williams is a rookie. Yeah, there's some pieces in place there, but to go out and say this team's going to win 9 or 10 games, I mean, I think that's a huge step. And to just say, oh, Caleb Williams is going to hit the ground running. He didn't even have a great year in college last year.
Right.
I mean, isn't he entitled to some kind of process of growth and development and some kind of learning curve like every rookie quarterback is?
Yeah.
I think it's totally unfair to say he's going to win 9 games. And I think you're getting plus money, by the way, on that under. And I know you don't love that division, fine. But don't tell me there's a cupcake in that division either, because every team in that division is competitive, including the Vikings, borderline playoff team. They're a quarterback away. They got a lot of pieces. Don't tell me the Vikings couldn't beat the Bears once this year. You know, the Packers and the Lions are playoff teams last year. Maybe they'll step back, like you said. Maybe they won't. But, yeah, I think you're getting plus 140 on DraftKings right now to take the Bears at under 8.5. To me, that's a great bet.
Yeah, I think that's just a safe bet, honestly, at this point. And then the third one that I'll throw out there is, you know, we talked about them, but the Rams over-under is 8.5. And if we think they're going to be a playoff team, let alone win the division, that means they go above 500.
Yeah.
So agreed. Just statistically, I think they're going to be a 9-plus win team.
I agree with that. I love the Rams this year to win 9 to 10 games, or if not more. I think they're going to be one of the better teams in the NFC. I mean, you're always looking for that one team every year that's going to emerge. And the Rams are a team that was in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. They've had some tough luck with injuries the last few years, but they've still got a lot of pieces in place. And I think it's very reasonable to say they could win 9 or 10 games this year.
And don't forget too, you know, the biggest question mark for them in the past has been Stafford's health.
Yep.
They went out and got Jimmy G.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So they have a deep quarterback room now. Yeah, they got a good safety net. Yeah. So
it's a great point. All right, I'll give you another one I like. Raiders under 6.5.
Yeah.
Getting plus 115.
Yep.
I think the Raiders are going to be the worst team in the NFL this year.
I had them slotted as my second worst team, but I did consider them for the worst team.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would agree with you.
But six, I mean, I know the division is, I guess, isn't that great. I mean, you do got the Chiefs, the Chargers now with Harbaugh. I mean, Denver's obviously in a rebuild. 6.5, you tell me that Raiders team is going to win 7 games with Aiden O'Connell. They got 2 tight ends they've drafted in the first round the last 2 years. I mean, Davante Adams doesn't want to be there. I could see that whole thing falling apart this year.
I could too. I mean, yeah, there's not a ton of talent on that roster. I 6.5 games is going to be tough.
Yeah.
I think they're the worst team in that division.
Yeah.
By far.
And maybe in the conference.
Yeah.
Maybe in the conference. Right there with the Pats, unfortunately. Who else you got?
Well, if you're asking who I
got a couple others if you don't have any more.
Were you talking over-unders or who I think the worst team in the league is?
Over-unders.
Over-unders. I think, look, I kind of like the, I know this is going to sound crazy, but, I kind of like the, whatchamacallit, I'm just going to, the Browns over under of 8.5. I think the Browns are a good team. Yeah. I think the Browns are a good team. I think that's a 9 or 10 win ball club,
but a tough division.
Tough division. And then the Packers. I think the Packers right now are at 9.5 wins. I think that's going to be 8 or 9 win team.
Maybe so you got to take the under on the Packers.
Take the under on the Packers, yeah.
Wow, that's a bold pick. I kind of like the over on that. I like the under on Seattle. You're getting plus money now. So the VIG is plus 100, so more or less even money. Seattle's win over under total, 7.5. Rookie coach, Geno Smith. He kind of had a little run here the last few years, but I think this will be his last year as the quarterback in Seattle. I think that's a rebuilding team. I could easily see them winning 3, 4, 5 games this year. So I'll take Seattle's under.
All right, Seattle's under. I don't hate that. Is there any team that you think is getting just way too much respect? Like just way too much respect?
Besides the Bears?
Beside the Bears?
I'd have to look at the list. What do you think about Buffalo, 10.5?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I like the under on both the Bills and the Cowboys at 10.5.
See, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would touch those, to be honest with you. I think I'd probably fade both those. But I still think, yes, the Bills are going to be diminished without Stephon Diggs, but I still think they're the best team in the AFC East. I still think they probably win the division. Though I wouldn't count out the Jets, I guess, even though I'm not super bullish on the Jets. I think it's going to be a weak AFC East this year, is I guess what I'm saying. I think you're going to see a team, if a team can get to 10 or 11 wins, they're a slam dunk to win the AFC East this year. I think you're going to see three mediocre teams in Buffalo, the Jets, and the Dolphins. And I still would probably take the Bills out of all three of them.
I don't know, man. The Bills to me, maybe I'm wrong, but like, I just feel like this team's spirit has to be broken.
Yeah.
If not, it's on the verge of breaking. Right. And they just shipped out their number one and number two receiver. They lost a couple of their staples on defense. I think it's going to be an upward battle for the Bills this year.
Yeah.
I do.
It could be. I'll tell you one thing. I'm not touching their over. I mean, 10.5 is, I think, way too high. Like I said, I still think they got a chance to win the AFC East, but I'm not putting my money on that. And you know, I could easily see them winning the division at 9 wins or 10 wins. I mean, does that team have what it takes to get to 11 wins? I don't think so. I don't know. I'm not going to bet on that. And then I think there's a couple we might disagree on that I have. First of all, how about this one? Houston's over-under is 8. Does that sound low to you?
So I got them here at 9.5.
Okay, let me recheck that. Which book are you got?
So FanDuel and BetMGM got them at 9.5.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I saw them at 8 on DraftKings. And maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, if it's 8 on DraftKings, I'm going to smash that.
Smash the over, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure they're going to be right in it for the division. I mean, so I kind of like Houston's over in that, if that is indeed the case at 8. If you could just give me a sec, I can look it up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get to that later. Okay. Any other over-unders you like?
I'm trying to look at some of the teams at the bottom. The Jaguars, 8.5. I think I take the under. I don't think that's going to be an above 500 teams.
I like that pick. I like that pick under on the Jaguars. I agree with you. I think this is going to be a real eye-opener for Trevor Lawrence defenders this year.
Yeah,
that's what I think is going to happen this year.
I'll tell you the one I'm most conflicted about.
Yeah.
Is the Steelers.
Okay.
Because the Steelers, I think, have one of the toughest schedules I've ever seen.
Yeah, they have a tough schedule.
They have a very tough schedule. But I also think that's a team that has a great defense.
Yeah.
They have a coach with a proven track record of winning games. They've never gone below 500.
Right. And what's their total? 8.5, right?
7.5.
DraftKings has them at 8.5.
So FanDuel's got them at 7.5. BetMGM's got them at 8.5.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd probably go on FanDuel and take the over. But that's a conflicting.
See, I like the over for Pittsburgh for the reason you just said. I mean, I think you're going to put your money on the fact they've never been below 500 with Tomlin. They're going to find a way to get to 9 wins every year. And you're getting plus 125 on the VIG. So it's a good play, I think. It's good value. The schedule's tough, but they're a good team.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Eke their way to 9 wins with Russell Wilson? I think absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, man. So we got a long off season, couple weeks ahead. So I think we can take a look maybe at like week one spreads, and we're gonna talk about Super Bowl contenders. Why don't we save that all for the next episode? I think we're gonna have definitely shortage of content in coming weeks for football as we kind of really get into like the thick of the off season here.
Yeah, for sure. One last thing I'll say, just because you said that, you have the Raiders as being your worst team in the league. I got the Panthers repeating as the worst team in the league. I have no faith in Bryce Young. I think the organization's a mess.
Yeah.
I think they're a few years away from being relevant again.
One of the reasons why you saw six quarterbacks taken in the top 12 this year is because supposedly this isn't a great quarterback class coming up this year.
Right.
So, you know, to your point, if Bryce Young bombs out and Carolina's the worst team in the league again, where do they go from there?
Yeah.
You know, that leaves them maybe in not a great year to have that number one pick and still kind of helpless franchise. All right, man. Any other thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, that's it. Just, I'm looking forward to things picking back up.
Yeah.
You know, we're almost there.
Yeah, but. I mean, minicamp will be out, coming up in a couple of weeks. That's always a little bit of news coming from that. Get a good look at Drake May.
Yeah.
See what comes up, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Start to entertain the fantasy news again.
But it's nice to have a schedule. It's nice to have a schedule to look at. I mean, that's when you know at least things are coming into focus a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel like the schedule release is always like kind of a pivotal point. It kind of gives you like an actual countdown to
No doubt about it. Awesome. All right. Well, I want to thank everyone that listened, watched, digested this content in any way. This is the Ultimate Patriots Podcast with Dr. Football and Justin Fine, presented by EdgeBetter. Want to wish you all a great week. We will be back recording in the next week or two as content develops. We will be here to discuss it, and have a great week, everyone.